welcome to W Rated, the show where we willingly watch the world's worst rated movies. Today, you've joined us on this year's Road to Razzies, our annual season of episodes looking at the nominations for the controversial Golden Raspberry Awards 2024. For new listeners, I'm Daisy, and as always, I'm joined by podcast co-creator, host and editor Claire. Claire, would you like to tell us which film we're talking about this episode?
Today we are talking about Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, which is nominated for two awards. It is nominated for Worst Prequel, Remake, Ripoff or Sequel, as well as Worst Screenplay, which was written by Jez Butterworth, John Henry Butterworth, David Coepp and James Mangold, who also directed it. Yeah, that's that one. That's what it's nommed for. I guess I'll go first. Brief history of Claire and Indiana Jones. Never seen an Indiana Jones film until this. Didn't go back and watch the...
I can't believe this.
I've seen bits of them. Like, I've seen the famous bits. And at uni once, they made us sit for an entire lecture and they just made us watch the making of one of the Indiana Jones films, like the featurette on the DVD. I'm like, someone was hungover that day and couldn't cope. I've seen the making of one of them. I've seen a few clips, you know, famous clips. But I think because I kind of know what happens in all of them and I've seen the big stunts and I'm not an action girl, I've just never had any interest to watch them. It's not been like, with Fast and Furious, if someone was like, should we put one on? I would have been like, absolutely fucking not. Whereas if someone was ever like, do you want to watch an Indiana Jones film? I would have been like, I guess. Like, if someone really wanted to watch it, I'd be fine with it. But no one's ever proposed to watch one, so I've never watched
it. And that's on them. That's their fault that you haven't seen it.
Yeah, so, I was even saying to someone, I was like, I don't even think we owned them on video. Like, I don't remember seeing them on our VHS shelf. So I don't know how...
Because that would be the thing, right?
Yeah.
That would be the influence of it for our generation.
Like, we were that a Star Wars
me,
family.
Like, my dad putting them on. Yeah, we did both. My dad would have put them on, like, you know, at the weekend and stuff. They've always been on TV and everything, I think, even when we were growing up.
They were always on BBC, which I think, again, is why I've never felt the urge to watch them, because they were always on. But yeah, I don't remember my family...
And you feel like you've seen it.
Yeah, don't remember my family ever being like, let's all watch Indiana Jones. Whereas my brothers were always putting Star Wars on. So, like, we were a big Star Wars fan. So, yeah, saw this. I'll have opinions that other people won't.
And it just upsets me that this is the one you've seen.
Oh, okay. Well, I think it's fine.
Oh, like, well, then you should watch the other one.
Like, not in that I thought the film was fine. I have opinions on the film, but, like, in the way that I felt like this did work as an independent film, where it's, like, Fast 10, just no fucking clue what was happening at any point. This actually did, because this was aimed at, like, people bringing their kids to it and introducing a new generation to the story, I felt like this did actually really work as an independent standalone film. So, like, it was fine to me that I hadn't watched the others.
Because, again, we've talked quite a lot about the different kinds of sequels. Mm-hmm. Like, is it a requel? Is it like a sequel and all of this?
But it's just straight, like, a straight up sequel / it's independent own thing.
I would say it's a legacy sequel.
Yeah.
Because the thing with the legacy sequels is it is that kind of soft reboot thing.
I guess, because I'm like, I'm not seeing all the callbacks. So it didn't feel like there were any callbacks to me because I don't know what they were.
That's true. I'll be honest, I don't think this was overloaded with them. Mm-hmm. I think when they did them, it was fine. I can't remember any specific examples. I mean, the fact that it opens with Nazi Germany is, like, the biggest callback, to be honest.
We can talk about it later, but I guess we can bring it up now because you've brought it up. The way people were talking about the de-aging in this film, I thought the entire film was set in the past and done with de-aged Harrison Ford.
Right.
The way that people were talking about how awful it was and how it completely ruined the film and they couldn't go. I was like, firstly, it didn't look that bad. I've seen far worse. And also, it was like 5 minutes, maybe 10. Why was everyone being so dramatic?
Yeah, I agree. I don't really see why everyone was so up in arms about it. I think it was probably some of the best de-aging I've actually seen.
Yeah.
think it's because they used a stunt double. I don't think they used Harrison
that's
Ford.
That's good, because Harrison Ford can't move.
Well, I tried to put this into my short review at the time, but I couldn't quite word it right. But it made me think of, have you seen The Irishman?
No, I haven't.
So they used de-aging in that. I don't think it's the best. I don't think it's the worst if I remember rightly. But what really brought me out of it was there was meant to be a moment when Robert De Niro's character was maybe in his like 30s or 40s and he was like kicking the shit out of someone, but it looked like a 70-year-old man trying to kick the shit out of someone. So it's one thing to de-age your face, yeah. But if you're using a 70-year-old's body, it's going to be uncanny. So I do, that's why I'm pretty sure they used a stunt double for
and
this.
And it's much better because that was the thing with Samuel L. Jackson and Captain Marvel. He looked great. Because we all know what Samuel L. Jackson looked like in that at that age, and he looked right. But then when you would see him walking, it was like, that's an old man walk.
Oh, I forgot that it's set in the 90s, yeah. Isn't it? Yeah. So, what was it like in the first one? I can't remember. Was it the same sort of issue?
Oh, no, so that is the first one. In the Marvels is set in current day.
Oh, okay, got you.
But yeah, in the first one, there was just that issue on long shots. You never, I felt the de-aging on him was quite good, apart from when you would see him running. So I liked in this
bizarre,
that it wasn't that bad.
How people just, yeah, so they're so upset, like, so focused on getting the face right that they're not. Again, this is what we were kind of alluding to a little bit in our Ghosted episode, which is when you're focused so much on technology mm-hmm. and getting things right for an algorithm that you lose the humanity of what makes us believe this is real.
Yeah.
It's what's not said. It's the your body language and mm-hmm. the type. It's all of that that people just seem to forget. You can't just. You can do it because you can think of ways around it, but if you're not thinking of it, then that's why it's Uncanny Valley.
Yeah.
Well, but yeah, no, I agree. I don't think it was that bad. I quite liked the opening actually because it felt reminiscent of the originals.
What is your history with the originals?
Oh, I love Indiana Jones. I think I definitely watched them when I was younger, but it was more of a. They were on, I don't really remember them that much. And then I think I probably rewatched them as a teenager and it was just so, it's just like classic, like Sunday afternoon Spielberg, like, mm-hmm. like a warm blanket of like, what they were trying to do was reminiscent of something that they experienced in their mm-hmm. childhood, which was like the serial was in the 40s and 50s and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's amazing that they were able to recreate it to a point where it feels like that's something nostalgic for you, even though you're born in the 90s. And I think that kind of sums up what's so great about them. They've got a lot of charm. They've got the little witty one-liners, but they've got the romance. I think they're beautifully shot. Harrison Ford is just like the most handsome, gorgeous man at this moment in time.
I watched Working Girl for the first time last year. He is quite hot in Working Girl. I've only known Harrison Ford as old man Harrison Ford and was like, well, hello. Hello, sir. I understand Callista Flockhart now.
I feel like he hadn't quite grown into it in Star Wars.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But like in the 80s.
Yeah.
And there's like pictures of him as like when he's a carpenter, he's got his glasses on. I'm like, Harrison, where have you been? but it is one of those that it's just got something for everyone, I think. Mm-hmm. Fun for the whole family. It's funny when you kind of, there's been a lot of talk around like films being like theme park rides mm-hmm. and stuff. But this is when it works.
Yeah.
It does feel like you're along for the adventure. You know, there has been rides made out of Indiana Jones films, but it's almost it was meant for that. Yeah, it was meant for that. It's got a visceral nature to it, you know, the rolling ball, the mine cars, like things like that. People don't necessarily like the Temple of Doom, the female lead or supporting actress in that. I think that kind of, there's certain things, but there's so much more in that story that is iconic as well. It is mm-hmm. a prequel, and I think there's like, unless you're into the films, and I think that it doesn't spoon feed you that it's a prequel. So sometimes I think there's been a lot of people still saying, I can't believe people still don't realise. But unless you've watched them and are into them, then there is no reason why you know. Literally, they did it, I think, because they didn't want to carry on doing Nazis and whatever followed. They wanted to do mm-hmm. something separate. But the third one is then a sequel. And mm-hmm. it's more with him and his dad, who's played by Sean Connery, and again, has its own merits with that relationship.
Mm-hmm.
It's just very cool. An archaeologist turned
adventurer. He's got his hat and his whip.
Because I've always annoyed people. I really love the National Treasure films, and so people get mad that I've never seen Indiana Jones.
Yeah, it must have been very like heavily influenced. I don't think it's quite got the essence of it, but for the film, for films that were out at the time, it's definitely got that draw, that same draw for people. And I mean, the Crystal Skull was absolutely lambasted when it came out because of certain things in it being too far-fetched. They didn't like Shia LaBeouf, and I think it just suffered a little bit from legacy sequelness of the time as well, even in the
2000s. And I feel like at that point as well, Shia LaBeouf was really like oversaturated. Like he was in every, he was the Chris Pratt of that era. He was in every franchise.
That's such a good comparison. and I think people just, they felt like it was far-fetched. I mean, I don't know. Are you okay with spoilers?
Yeah, like, I might one day watch them. Like, it's the kind of, if someone sat me down and was like, can we watch them? I'd be like, yeah, absolutely. But am I ever just going to sit there like by myself and click them? No.
I don't mind spoiling this one for you because this is not necessarily the one that's going to be the best one that you watch. Mm-hmm. But as long as you're okay with that. But basically, at the end, the whole thing is revealed to be to do with extraterrestrials.
Oh, but aliens.
But hear me out. I say extraterrestrials because I don't want it to be, it's not like alien, like little green guy. Like it's all kind of built into like Aztec history and things like that. But all of the other ones have a layer of otherworldly fantasy to them. It's just
this one had
like
time
the
travel.
Arc. The arc melts someone's face off.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's always had that. And I just think that Aliens was like a bit jumping the shark for people. But I think they people had like a cross to burn anyway with it. I think that you're always going to get that with sequels. So it was really interesting when they announced this one. I think I probably just wasn't that bothered about sequels. I think I'm sequel saturated now. I know Harrison Ford's getting a lot older and I know that he doesn't really care for revisiting his characters. He does just want to make a living and that's perfectly fine. But from what I understand, he was much more excited to revisit this role than he was Han Solo. Like you say, this one has time travel. But I do think it's an interesting way of loop, like weaving it in, and I do think it's to the level of which they've tried to weave in before. It's just a little bit more far-fetched, but it's still, I think, within its essence of what Indiana Jones kind of is, you know, related to archaeology and everything. It was never going to touch the originals.
Yeah.
I knew that. James Mangold did Logan, right?
Did you know he did Girl Interrupted? No. Sorry. Michael Mann did Girl Interrupted, which is equally... No, sorry.
I found out the person
that did Girl Interrupted the other day.
Taking me on a roller coaster of emotions.
It is James Mangold. He did Girl Interrupted. And I was like, what?
Madness.
Because I was like, what other films?
Did he direct it as well?
He directed it.
Yeah.
Because I was like, what other films of his have I seen? And I was like, Ford and Ferrari, Logan. And then I was like, oh, he did Girl Interrupted. So odd.
Madness. Yeah, I mean, oh, he did Walk the Line.
Did he? Oh, so he did.
Crazy. So a few of these I haven't seen. Girl Interrupted is like iconic for a woman growing up getting into film. Walk the Line obviously doesn't need to be said why that's so good, and a few others I haven't seen, but yeah, I think Logan is probably what he's most sort of like heralded for in most recent years, and for good reason. And I was really hoping it would be more down that line, which is we've spoken about this on our Exorcist episode when we talked about Halloween. Where would this character be at this time, and how do we explore this as an arc in this moment versus just redoing what they've done before? And I think they tried to touch on it with this, but I think it was done so lazily and kind of in the background and just kind of served the thing of why Marion wasn't in it and why his son wasn't in it. It was writing, what's the word where it's like plot convenience, it's like, I can't remember, but it's plot contrivances or something. But it's a shame because you could have used that, and you could have done a really, like, you could have done it as like an interesting character study on what would happen to Indiana Jones once this happened to him after all the adventures, etc. And you could still do an adventure like this. There were moments in this that I did like. And they did harken back to, it did still feel like his character, although every character he plays now is pretty much Harrison Ford as. but it's, yeah, it just feels like a bit of a wasted opportunity, to be honest.
I actually found it quite fun, but obviously I don't have the history, so I thought it was a nice little film. I enjoyed myself.
I like that you find it fun, because hopefully it means that when you do watch the other ones, you'll really enjoy them. Yeah. Do you want to tell us a bit about what you liked about it?
I don't really, I'm trying to find my review. I've started ranking these films. So far I watched 11 Razzie nominated films, and this is my number 2.
What was your first one?
Shazam, because I actually like Shazam is not a good film, but I like the characters and I like the actors. So like my disappointment with Shazam was that it wasn't Shazam 2. Like it wasn't the Shazam 2 I wanted. But like
it was Black Adam 2 without Black Adam.
Yeah, so like but because I like the characters and I like the actors, I still had an alright time.
That's fair.
So I gave this like 3.5 stars. What did I write on my review? Oh, it was very simple. Harrison Ford, good. Phoebe Waller-Bridge, good. Mads Mikkelsen, good. Sound design, so engrossing, my housemate and I nearly got in an argument because she said it was too loud. I really liked the sound design.
Sound design being loud
is, you know, that nearly occurs.
As a Nolan girl, like, I'm fully on board with that. I mean, I was still 3 stars. Like, I did originally have it as 3.5, but as I wrote my review, I started to feel like I was like, okay, maybe it's a little bit more on
the difference
side.
For that half star with me is whether I'd say to someone to watch it, and I was like, I would say to someone, give this a go. I wouldn't be like, don't watch it. I'd be like, no, it was good. I think I think the reason that I was on board with it was I felt like all of the actors were on board with it. Even Harrison Ford, who's so curmudgeon-y, I felt like he was happy to be there and he was giving it, you know, his best stuff. Whereas like looking at like The Exorcist and Fast X, I felt like a lot of them didn't want to be there and they felt like they were reading cue cards and they felt they could feel the green screen. Whereas I felt like all of these people were all together on a set, whether it was a green screen or not, I felt like those people existed in the same room together and collaborated.
Interesting. Okay, because I can't really place how I feel about Phoebe Waller-Bridge because I've not seen her in whatever. I've not seen Fleabag, so I've not seen her at what everyone deems her best.
Yeah, like I thought Fleabag season 1 was insanely overrated. I didn't get it. I watched it all in one go and was like, I don't get it. And then I started Fleabag season 2 and I was like, oh okay, everyone is 100% correct. Good lord. And then
so
my
friend.
So it
kind of feels like she has a bit of a shtick.
Yeah, because then my friend took me. Fleabag was originally a one-woman show, and I saw the National Theatre version of the one-woman show when she did a re-thing of it, and they filmed it, and we went to see it at the cinema, and the one-woman show was excellent. But yeah, unfortunately, she does have a stick, so depending on how in or out, I wasn't sure. My mileage does vary on her, but actually, I didn't mind this, and I felt like she did fit into the world because an upper middle class white bitch who can just do what she wants because she's pretty and has loads of money. Like, yeah, that makes sense for that world. She would get away,
and she does wink at the camera a little bit as well, which definitely fits in with that universe. Yeah. You know, there's you kind of don't know which side she sits on, whether she's like, because there's the whole thing of is she with him, is she without him? You know, she's out for her own interests. I think it's a really good character. It definitely, mileage may vary because I'm just not sure about her still. Because the only other thing I've seen her in is Solo, which it was her voice.
Robot.
And that was an interesting character. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just because I've heard so many good things about Fleabag and her writing. And then
She was the showrunner for season 1 of Killing Eve, which is the only good season of Killing Eve.
Interesting. So she's clearly talented, and I'm not saying I don't like her. I'm not in the Phoebe Waller-Bridge fan club yet.
And I like her. I'm not in the fan club either, so I think I'm ahead of you, but I'm not, you know, putting the badge on.
Yeah, but I think she did a good job here. I think it was just, what it is because it felt like a bit of a missed opportunity overall for it to be a focus on him, because she does take quite a lot of the limelight, which isn't a bad thing. It is, it's one of those things where people are like, you know, when they're trying to bring in new characters
to go off and do the sequels.
Because it's a, it kind of felt a little bit like that. Yeah. And that's fine and it works, but there's a bit of an emotional barrier because I'm like, I can see.
No, I was like that. I don't like the new Scream films, and I was like that. My main reason is, unfortunately, I don't like Melissa Barrera's character in the new Scream films, whereas I do like the sister. But I had that issue because I was like, I just want to go back to my old friends. Stop making me watch these new characters that I have no interest in that aren't very well developed. So I think this was better developed, but I can see if you're there for indie, why it would be a bit frustrating.
Yeah, and I love Marion, and she's not in it, and I'm not saying that she should be, but she was in Crystal Skull, and I feel like...
So she is his a little bit wife. Like, when does she... Is she in all of them?
No, she's in the first one where they had a relationship, and then the point is them, like, coming back into each other's lives. Obviously, the second one's a prequel. I can't remember about the third one. I think they may have broken up. And then the whole thing is that they find each other again and that she's had a son with Shia LaBeouf. And they're back together, like, on an adventure again in Crystal Skull. And then it's like this one, oh, they've separated and he's off. So it's just very, like, can she be available for filming or not? Yeah. And, you know, you can see right through it. And rather than using that as a vehicle of how do we write our way out of this in a really interesting way, it just seems to be written off.
Yeah.
But she's in it at the end. So it's like, oh my God, what? I don't know. I just don't think she was best utilized. I don't know. Like, it's fine. It's fine.
So, I mean, the main
award... It's too long.
I felt the runtime was fine. Like, I was eager to finish it. I was enjoying myself. And I think that's the thing as well, watching it in the context of all of these other films. I would say it's the only one that one of the only ones I've actively been enjoying myself and, like, properly along for the ride and couldn't feel the runtime. Whereas, like, Magic Mike, I had to pause it so many times because it just... I felt my death arriving with the length of it.
I wonder as well, because you've been watching all of these other ones that I've already sat through.
Yeah.
This would have been a nice
it was a breath of really, really was. But I mean, so let's do the screenplay award first. I was happy with the screenplay. I don't think it is a bad screenplay at all, but obviously my context is very different. So what would you think?
I don't think that that's what's the issue. I say, I think there's missed opportunities, but it's definitely not like a crap cash grab of a sequel. I think the adventure that they go on is an interesting one. It's all, you know, it's another MacGuffin chase, but they all kind of are.
That's adventure films full stop, really.
Exactly. So I think there's... the thing is, throughout the whole thing, I was always entertained by what was going on. I just felt like it ran too long.
Yeah.
And for a sequel of a group of films that I really like, I was hoping for something a little bit more depth. Whereas this, again, is kind of just a, let's do it again with an old Harrison Ford and new characters. And that's fine. It just didn't work hugely well for me. Screenplay-wise, though, I thought dialogue was really quippy. Some of it was a little eye-rolly, but, you know, what was we talking about? Like, screenplay, worst screenplay for Exorcist.
Yeah.
Like, come on. They're, like, nowhere.
Yeah.
It's nowhere near. It's just a shame that they didn't... I don't know whether it was... You know, considering James Mangold did Logan, I don't know if he wrote it, but it's a shame that it kind of seems like they maybe didn't... Not trust him, but I think a lot of the conversations around movie studios at the moment is how risk averse they are and how it's much easier for them to do a run of the mill by the numbers thing rather than that appeals to loads of people rather than say, oh, hey, people really love that. That could work for this. Let's take a little bit of a gamble. And I wonder if it had happened maybe 5-10 years ago, we would have got that instead.
I think the thing there, and I'm sure actually people have written about it already, but I'd be interested to read some of the things or future people write about it. But I think it's the problem of, like, we're now making films for a global market, whereas they always, like, the Indiana Jones films were made for an American market, and if other markets liked them, that was great. Whereas now, all films, because budgets are out of control and stock values and all the nonsense, the films have to appease the American audience, but then they also have to appease an Asian audience who all have different censorship rights. Then they also have to appease a UK and an Australia and a Europe and an Africa and an everywhere. So then you can't take what probably wouldn't have been a risk for the original ones because they were only appeasing America and America values.
Well, this is the thing, because like some of the Indiana Jones are a bit racist.
Yeah.
Well, not racist, and just racially insensitive,
and that's the thing. I love the idea of a global world and bad racism. Let's get rid of that. But at the same time, then if you're trying to appease every single nation who all have mad different values, then you are just making the most sanitized version
of everything. Yeah, it's a real shame. It's a real shame. But I, you know what? I'd never even thought about it like that. Because me and my boyfriend were discussing, I saw a thread about the coyote versus acne thing and about how that's where the risk averse thing came from, about how, you know, studios are now being run by like accountants who never want to lose a penny versus back in the day, Hollywood obviously wanted to make money, but it would, we should definitely reference the poster in the notes in the episode, but they were saying how they would spread their risk, spread their costs. Mm-hmm. So they would invest in smaller films that maybe don't make money or a lot of money, and then it'll have one huge hit that'll pay for everything. And they just don't want to do that anymore. And this is an okay version of another one of these films with your point to it as well. It's, the IP thing, the Marvel, which is from Marvelization of everything. Then you've got the wanting it to appeal to everyone, and that comes from not being risk averse. So it's like, how do we make sure this makes money? But then you're right, it's like they're having to spend so much money when they don't, I don't know if they need, it's almost if they've thingied themselves into a corner, like movies have to cost this much now. So therefore they have to make so much, and it's just like you're literally stuck. But given that that's the case, I think this one is relatively okay.
I was happy with it. And then the other award is obviously worst remake, prequel, ripoff or sequel. For me, I was fine with this, but having never seen any of the others, I can't really talk to it. But I did enjoy that it was a sequel that made sense to a new audience. I just would like to give them points for that. As a new time viewer, it was nice. I didn't feel lost. But I'll let you talk about that award.
And I think that that's the good side of what we just spoke about trying to bring new audiences in, right? Because Fast X definitely didn't do that. But I think if they were to do a risk assessment on these films, they wouldn't need that because they know it brings it in. I don't think it needs, it should be in that category. I think naturally with Indiana Jones, everyone's always going to be like, how dare you touch such a sacred artifact, which is hilariously ironic. I'd be interested to speak to people who were around, who watched the originals when they came out and loved them, what their reaction was to Crystal Skull and then this. Because that, oh my God, that got such, not even backlash, but just like people hated the idea of it. And then, I don't know if they hated the idea, but they hated it when it came out for sure.
I just did a quick little Google of it. And it was also, Crystal Skull was also nominated for worst prequel, remake, ripoff or sequel and won.
And I think at the time, I probably would have agreed, but it has been under a little bit of a retrospect now. And I think that's because we are getting such slop now that actually, in comparison, that maintained, you know, the essence of Indiana Jones. Yeah. It was just jumped the shark a little bit, whereas this is good. But then when you look at the industry as we've just described it, there's a lot that is just such drivel.
Yeah.
That we didn't actually know how good we had it, I don't think. Although there were some shockers too.
It's interesting that, Crystal Skull won this award, so will they keep up the trend? And Dial of Destiny also win it.
What are the other ones who were nominated? Exorcist.
This year. We have Expendables 4, Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey, Exorcist Believer.
Oh, because that's a remake.
And Ant-Man. So not Shazam. Sorry, Ant-Man took the Shazam spot. So we've got Expendables,
okay.
Exorcist, Winnie the Pooh, Ant-Man, and Indiana Jones. To be honest, I think Exorcist will get it.
Yeah.
Deservedly.
Yeah, I think
is that
this
what
is just
in the
a
last
bit of
episode?
A shoe.
I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see. But I think this is just a classic rehash of Crystal Skull. And I don't think it doesn't necessarily deserve to be nominated for some people because it was pretty middle of the road for me. So I'm sure a lot of people didn't like it. But I do think it's testament to it had to be there because it's, you remember, oh, we did it before. Like, it's just an easy, what's the word? Low-hanging fruit.
Mm-hmm.
I think is probably the reasoning behind that.
My last question for you on Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. spoilers. Kind of spoiled anyway, but big spoilers. I definitely thought that he was going to stay in wherever they went and die in the past. And I was like,
yes,
oh my God, how poignant is
that?
I was like, is this why everyone hates it? Because they let him die. Because I love the idea of Harrison Ford just going around to every iconic character he's ever played and be like, I'll do a sequel if I can die. He's just
die.
Like, I'm killing them all. And I just love that idea, but then he lived.
No, and I think that would have bumped, honestly, that would have probably bumped out by half star for me.
Yeah, I thought that would have been really poignant.
Three and a half. Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Within the history that he loved so much.
It would have had something to say about, it would have been James Mungo coming in and going, this is what I think about, this is what I have to say about Indiana Jones' story. Yeah. And unfortunately, it just doesn't really have an opinion. It's a kind of a bit of a story by committee. It's just if imagine they were like serials and they were like coming out with like books and comic books and stuff, it wouldn't be someone else's take on it. It would be, we need to churn out another one.
It's like a filler film.
That's okay. Yeah, it's okay. Yeah. And I enjoyed it and we was there, you know, but I would have rushed back to watch it. Whereas I rewatched the Indiana Joneses I think summer last year. Because the thing is, I've rewatched all of the franchises right in preparation to go to the cinema, and I never had time to go to the cinema, so now I had to catch them all at home. But I do have a very good cinema that's like 5 minutes away from me now, not even that, so I do actually go. But I could easily watch them all again. I could probably watch them at least twice a year.
Yeah.
Because it's the vibe, it's the atmosphere, it's, you know, it's... whereas this, I think they do have to work a bit harder now. Because there is so much, because they churn out so much, because they spend so much money, we're a bit like, what else you got? I'd rather them scale it back and do that. But it's like, we expect more, just in the wrong space.
Yeah.
They try really hard in VFX and budgets and trying to appeal to everyone. And it's almost like that you're trying in the wrong space.
Well, I think the whole market's so fucked up by now, they have to book their release slots so many years in advance that they now can't move. A film can't be delayed. A film can't run long.
Oh, right. Is it because there's so many releases?
Well, for the big tentpoles. So like a film like this, they want to make sure they're getting a big summer release. They want to make sure they're getting the right week in the right summer where there's not a Fast and Furious coming out, where there's not a DC coming out. So they all have to book in their slots, and then you get fucked because then
you work back from that
work back from that, and you can't risk releasing it a month later because, well, no, we can't release Indiana Jones a month later because that's when the new James Bond is coming out or the new so-and-so is coming out. Because that was the big thing with Barbie and Oppenheimer. Everyone found it hilarious, and Barbenheimer became such a thing because
happen anymore.
Well, where they both got delayed as well because of COVID and things, they both chose that release date and everyone was like, well, one of you is going to move, right? And they were like, well, the other one can move. And it was just hilarious that neither of them moved. They just both dug their heels in. We're like, no, we'll go together.
And actually, it did them a massive favour.
Such a massive favour. Whereas what should have moved was Mission Impossible, because Mission Impossible came out the week before and got obliterated.
Yeah, I mean, that just goes to show... potentially, because everyone's like, I work in PR, so everyone is trying to understand how they can recreate Barbenheimer, and it's just like, stop trying to make it happen. It's not going to happen. And it's just because of something happening that we're not used to happening anymore. And that's so fascinating. And I never thought about it like that. We're not used to release dates moving. And they are so particular with how they do everything. We don't notice it.
Yeah. And it was just
they
funny.
They are marketing to us.
It worked perfectly with Barbenheimer as well, because even when they were doing the announcements, they just, every day there was either an announcement of like the 100th actor joining the Oppenheimer cast or the 100th actress joining the Barbie cast. And everyone was like, oh, so all the men in Hollywood are in Scream 1 and all the women of Hollywood are in Scream 2. So it was just so funny because they do actually have a lot of parallels in terms of how they were crafted. But yeah, it was just the fact that both companies fucking dug their heels in, and the reason they had to was because neither of them could choose another week because of Mission Impossible, because of Indiana Jones, because of Fast X. There were no other weeks. Yeah, there were no other weeks for them to go to. So they were like, well, you move first. And then they just let it roll and it worked.
Yeah. Interesting.
But yeah, that for Indiana Jones, they picked that date and worked backwards. And so then if the script needed another polish, they didn't have time.
Oh, it's just honestly just opened up. Every time we record, I'm like, oh, this is why. I get it now.
That's why the Marvel films are so messy, because they don't have time.
Such a shame. Something's got to change. I do feel like there's a big change on the horizon, especially, and I think the Coyote versus Acme thing will be a catalyst.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, even with the Marvelization, I actually don't even know when the next Marvel film's coming out. Don't even know what it is, when it's coming out. Not a clue. And that is unheard of.
No, that's dying, isn't it?
That's unheard of for me.
I can't even think.
Not a clue. So that also shows a big shift. So, yeah. Well, there we go. Disney and Indiana Jones ride off into the sunset.
But they didn't kill him, so they could potentially come back.
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't want another one. I feel like it got through, it got under the line. Let's just...
Yeah, like his hat. Yeah. Oh, you wouldn't know.
I know, I've seen
Maybe they
it.
Did, no,
I've
I think they did it. Do that. I think they did do that as a callback in this one, actually.
I have seen the callbacks. Yeah. I've seen the 118 adverts. I've seen the Beer Cat movies adverts. I've seen the Simpsons.
That's your reference point.
The Simpsons and the Bob's Burgers, and I've seen them all.
Okay. You've seen all the references, just not the real thing.
I've seen the making of as well. So, you know, I'm good.
And the making of, Thanks for tuning in, everyone, and we hope you can join us for another mini episode as we tackle another Razzie-nominated film on our road to Razzies 2024.